The views expressed on the Creative Cities show are not necessarily those of its sponsors or any organization that the host is affiliated with.
Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to a new year and welcome to the Creative Cities show with Zach Yensers. Every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping the future of Tucson now. Hopefully, you had a great time with friends and family over what feels like the second weekend. We're also in our second Mondayest of Thursdays, the day after a holiday. Feels like a Monday. We're back in studio and back in our groove, back in the rhythms of daily radio life, live radio life here in the 1030 The Voice Bustos Media Studios. Welcome again back, and I'm looking forward to today's kind of transition show as we leave 2019 and head into 2020. Quick lay of the land. I'm excited for how this week will end up. We're going to do a review of the 2010s today, and I'm looking forward to your calls on 790-2040. 520 is the zip on, is the area code on that. 520-790-2040. How did the world change? And what will history say? And we'll also look at what did the 2010s mean for Tucson, plus some of my predictions for the 2020s. So that should be fun. And I want to encourage you to give me a call, jump on our phone lines to be a part of that conversation. Would love to get your view of what the 2010s meant to our city, meant to our country, meant to the world. What does that say about 2020? And then tomorrow, really excited to have Barbara Coffey, Director of Economic Development Initiatives for the City of Tucson. She'll be in studio for not one segment, not two segments, but the whole hour to talk about 2020 and where we're at and where we're going and some of the themes on the horizon as we look to build well on the foundation that I would say was set in the 2010s. The majority, actually all of Mayor Rothschild's tenure was during the 2010s. And so I think it'll be interesting to see where does our city go next? What comes next? And what's up next? So we'll talk about that as well. That's tomorrow. But for today's show, let's get into it. Interesting to start to kind of ponder and think about the 2010s. We'll start, I think, bigger picture, maybe zone back in to Tucson. There are a few things as I'm reading, as I'm thinking, as I'm looking that I think have characterized the 2010s. I'm curious to see what you think. Let me just start with this. I think when I think about or when I read what other people are thinking about the 2010s, I'm always fascinated by how it's so narrow, right? It's like, well, 2010 started this and it ended this way in 2019. So that's our summary. And I think what strikes me as I've thought about where we've come and where we're going is that the 2010s, I think, were the culmination of 30 to 40 years of American life that went too wrong for too many. I even seen some people go, well, it started with the financial crisis. I don't think it started with the financial crisis. I think the 2010s were the culmination of 30 years of too many people, of too many wrong things happening for too many people. And I say that because what I'm fascinated by is when I look back on the elections of the early and mid 80s, for example, when you look at characters like Pat Buchanan, I think I got that name right. He worked in the Nixon administration. He was an advisor to Reagan. He ran for president multiple times. Gave Dole a hard time, gave Bush a hard time. I mean, he was the anti-globalism populist wing of the party. We think that Trump in 2016 was this new wave for America, philosophically. I don't know about you. Give me a call, 790-2040. I look back at the 80s, similar time, similar economic era, similar anti-establishment. When I listen back, and thanks to the power of YouTube, you listen back to the rhetoric, the conversation back in the 80s, kind of post Jimmy Carter, going into Reagan, and then kind of the 10 years right after Reagan, you heard the same things, except Trump and Pat Buchanan were running for the Reform Party. Right, remember they were both running for candidacy there. 2010 was just the decade where, after 30 or 40 years, enough of the systems and the hierarchy and the bureaucracy broke down, I think, around the world, where Brexit could happen, where Trump could happen. So my mind is that the 2010s will be the decade where those sentiments that had been building for 30 years just kind of spilled over. And in the next segment, I'll talk about some of the assessments of the 2010s that I agree with. The end of privacy, the rise of populism on both sides. I'm fascinated in the 2010s to see both populism on the left and on the right meet each other. I think it was an era of populism. The irony of the decade, the Obama-Trump foreign policy, way more overlap than most people want to think. Polarization and paralysis. I think we'll look at the 2010s as just a period where the sentiments of too many people for whom too many wrong things happened over 30 or 40 years spilled over, had enough momentum to put into prominence the views and the personality of Trump and what Trump represents in our country. Give me a call, 790-2040. Do you agree? We'll get into that in the next segment. I think for Tucson, I'm also curious to get your thoughts on that as we think about the 2010s. I think for Tucson, it was a renaissance. And maybe this shows the way for 2020, right? And the 2020s is that nationally, it was a time of paralysis and polarization. But locally, it seemed like a lot of things went better faster in Tucson. And even if that's just a view from one perspective, because there's already people looking back at the 2010s in Tucson, and I'm including that in some ways of what could have gone better, what needed to have gone better, what did we do better in the 2020s. But, you know, 1999 through 2009 in Tucson was a time where a lot of things didn't go well, and or at least quickly or efficiently. I think we saw a reversal of that. Certainly, you know, downtown started to be revitalized. Business started coming to Tucson. Rio Nuevo got back on its feet. Trust in government was largely restored. I think, again, you can look at the three municipal elections that Rothschild shepherded through regarding public safety and roads and parks. I think the 2010s in Tucson, maybe almost completely the opposite of national politics, was a period where there was generally large consensus, where a mayor and council seemed to be mostly on the same page most of the time on most things. And I think that forms a prediction of mine for 2020 and the 2020s, is that I think we're going to see kind of a new localism, where we're going to see people on the ground in local cities and counties getting the work done that isn't getting done at a state and federal level. To me, that's refreshing. But as I look back, I think the 2010s for Tucson and the 2010s for the country were two different stories. And I'll get into what I think that means for the decade ahead. But Tucson, give me a call. We're going to go to our first break, 520-790-2040. How will history view the 2010s? Some experts chime in, and I will give my hot takes here on the radio. You're listening to the Creative City Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Give me a call. We'll be right back.
Want to hear your favorite shows on your phone? Now available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hi, this is Jason with Keller Williams Realty. Today I want to share a pricing strategy with you that I would call speculative. It's where we take a home's fair market value and we would speculate a bit above that price and hope that a buyer is going to come along and pay top dollar due to its unique demand. Stay tuned next week for another pricing tip. Call me if I can help with anything at 520-310-6761.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Tucson, welcome on back in. Happy New Year to you, wherever you are. It's good to be with you here again on the show here in the beautiful 1030 The Voice studios this Thursday morning, January 2nd, 2020. Going to have to get used to saying that. I've already submitted paperwork that has said 2019. It's no longer 2019. It is 2020. Hope you had a great time with family. It's kind of our bridge day. We're bridging out of the 2019, out of the 2010s into the 2020s. What will history say about the 2010s? What did that decade mean for you, for your community, for your country? Give me a call, Tucson, 790-2040. Looking forward to your feedback as I give you mine. And tomorrow, Barbara Coffey, Director of Economic Initiatives for the City of Tucson, will spend all day with us tomorrow, 9 to 10. Our entire show will be talking City of Tucson and economic development. So make sure you set your watches and your calendars for that. Would love for you to join us on that hour tomorrow, January 3rd, 9 to 10. But I mentioned in the last segment how I think the one thing that we miss about the 2010s, the latter, probably what, two-thirds of the Obama era, the first administration, the first first 3 years of the Trump presidency. You know, I think we get so focused on what happened between 2010 and 2020, that decade, that we forget that, in my opinion, that the 2010s were the bubbling over of 30 years, as I mentioned in the last segment, of too many wrong things happening for too many people, that too many people for too long felt left behind, felt forgotten. And I back that up by looking at the rhetoric from the 1980s, when the Pat Buchanans of the world were giving the Doles and the Bushes of the world a hard time. It was just time for someone like Trump to be elected, and he did get elected. But that was not a 10-year or a 5-year phenomena. To me, that was 30 to 40 years of American life finishing up and resulting in the 2010s. So 790-2040 is your opportunity to give me your thoughts. Here's what some experts have said. History will view us in the how history will view the 2010s, and I picked out a few that I thought were interesting or that I especially agreed with. Now, I think we can agree that the 2010s may have either been the end or certainly a turning point in privacy, the amount that we were willing to give up, the amount for security, for freedom, that conversation. I think it was the era when we bought hook, line, and sinker into the power of the smartphone, the power of technology to make life more convenient. And it's so interesting when we talk about privacy now. We gave up privacy for convenience, in the sense almost where no one took privacy away from us in the 2010s. We gave it away. And so I think the 2010s will be that era where we see data and technology and communication technology, certainly on the heels of the Patriot Act and the first decade of the 2000s, I think we'll see the 2010s as that kind of bow on the box, as at least a turning point in how we consider privacy and what we want out of our private lives. And I'm always cautious when somebody says it's the end of blank blank, or, you know, this is when it all changes. I think things happen in cycles, and I'm cautious to say this was the end of this, but to the extent that people are saying the 2010s were the era when the concept of privacy changed, I'll certainly agree with that. The other element that I think is really interesting to know, and I think this could create a lot of great conversation on the air as you're hanging out with us this morning, 790-2040 is our live line to do that. I think the 2010s were, speaking of cycles, were the rise of populism, and the backlash against the elites. And it's funny because we talk about that, about the Trump presidency is a reflection of that on the right. What we don't talk about as often or as much, I think, is the populism on the left. And we see that manifested in the Democratic election here, the Democratic decision of 2020. Certainly Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are a manifestation of left-wing populism, just as Trump, I think, is the manifestation of populism on the right. But it's interesting to see people look all the way back to the Obama presidency as well. And the Obama presidency was supposed to be this turning point in American life. It was supposed to be this moment of unity. It was supposed to be this moment where the first African-American president ushered in a new America that would benefit the lives of minorities. And it's interesting to listen to experts, and I'm air quoting in the studio, say that the populism of the left, for example, Black Lives Matter, hashtag Black Lives Matter, was actually a response to this feeling that the Obama administration was a failure for African Americans, that the urban reforms didn't happen, that the economic development for persons of color were not happening. And so Black Lives Matter was not a response to the Trump presidency, right? We all know this. It was a response to the elite establishment. And we see that every debate, every time we open the news, we see that Obama is the new moderate centrist, right? Do you remember 8 years ago when Obama was the ushering in of everything left wing? Now, you talk to the Democratic Party, he's the ushering in of the elite center. And so I think the 2010s were this rise of populism on the left and the right. I've got a few more, but of course, curious to get your thoughts as we review the 2010s. Chris is on the line. He called 790-2040. Chris, you're on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Zach.
How are you?
Good. How are you today?
Good. Welcome to 2020.
You bet. Thank you. I just wanted to say that you were talking about Tucson's been on the same page with the mayor and the city council the last few years. Well, I found that Tucson is on the same page relating to downtown. Everything is about downtown, and it's easy to be on the same page when you have a 7-0 city council advantage over Democrats over Republicans. And when we on the east side here vote for a Republican on the east side for the council, it doesn't matter because of the ward only elections. We don't get our candidate. So there's only one voice, and it might be beautiful downtown, but I can't get out on the speedway without hitting four potholes. And it hasn't gotten better for everybody. And that was my comment.
Yeah, Chris, I appreciate it. And I guess a couple things on my mind is, I think we see very clearly what is on Mayor Romero's mind. I think Steve Kozacik has never really, and I appreciate this about him, has never failed to give his opinion. There's certainly a gentleman's code on the council where they will mostly align with the decision of the ward person who is, you know, making the decision on the issue on the table. I think there should be more diversity of opinion, by the way. But I still think that there was enough diversity on the council in terms of, you know, views of development, views of things to make it interesting if it was supposed to be interesting.
Zach, I wrote a check when he ran as a Republican to Kozachik, and he jumped parties on me, and I never did get my $50 back. You know, I'm a little bitter. There's not one voice. There's not two voices. There's one voice in this town, and we're heading to be Detroit of the desert. We're going to ring Tucson, which is going to be a total ghetto like Grand Elvernon has become. And I don't want to be negative, but everybody's going to move into Oro Valley, Green Valley, Vail, and Tucson's going to be a pit, and there's going to be big flight, just like the big cities back east. That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that, Chris. You made another comment, and I had a thought on it, and I can't remember what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're totally good. You had two really interesting themes there. Let me try and remember over the break. We're heading to a hard break.
All right.
But Chris, I appreciate
happy
you calling in, and if I remember the other thing I want to say, I'll do that after the break. But Happy New Year to you, and
happy
thanks
New
for your
Year
call,
you.
Chris.
Well,
yeah,
bye-bye.
You got it. If you called in, hang on the line. I want to talk to you after the break. Just a few minutes of news here. We'll be right back. 790-2040. You're on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. Look, we get it. Running a small to mid-sized business is hard work. And making sure you have a team that feels taken care of is just another thing on your plate, but it's so important. Welcome to HR Resolve, a human resource company that is local and can help you tackle payroll, workers' compensation, healthcare, and more. With HR Resolve, you're not just a number in the crowd. You're assisted by a local company that knows what it's like to run a business and can customize a plan for you. Give Shanae and the team at HR Resolve a call at 520-867-8383.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030 The Voice.
Tucson, welcome back to the program. Thanks for hanging out through the bottom of the hour news. You're catching us halfway through our first show, our first live show of the new year 2020 here, the Creative City Show with Zach Yentz. We're talking about people and ideas shaping the future of Tucson now. Welcome back in. We're talking about the 2010s in review and taking your calls. We're talking about Tucson and nationally. How will history remember the 2010s? Our last caller, Chris, raised two interesting points. I remembered one, and I remembered the other over the break. So we'll get back to one of Chris's thoughts. I have a thought back, but Matthew also called in 790-2040. Matthew, you are live and on the air. Thanks for calling in. Happy 2020.
Hey, happy 2020 there, Zach. It's a great subject. As I look at the year of the 2010s to today, I really sort of share at the national level with Chris, I would say, his sentiments in the sense that we had a failure across the board. I'd almost say it's the final pin or a final nail in our coffin. The complete breakdown in education around the country. I think that our entire educational system completely failed, and every element of it is represented in what Americans are today in the voting class. They're just desperate. And that's why I think that Donald Trump was alluring to them, because they really were failed, and they turned to the shiniest object that they recognized in hopes that he would somehow fix things. And I don't blame them, because if you look at the country, they basically are living paycheck to paycheck. They're eating fast food for their families. They're shopping in stores, buying the cheapest products that will last, you know, 3 months to 18 months, and then they have to go back and buy it again. And they can afford to buy it again because it's cheap products.
Matthew, I appreciate your thought there. And you know that I'm with you. I think that what I think bothers me about the 2010s interview, especially around as far as President Trump is concerned, is that we get so caught up, and I think the media gets us caught up in some of the social, political, cultural, ethnic themes that I think the kimono has been opened to reveal some of our deep divisions on that. But I think that distracts from what I believe, and it sounds like you believe, and I talked about it in the first segment, is the broader economic and lifestyle themes that have gone too wrong for too long for too many people. And again, I don't think the country was ready to elect a Pat Buchanan or Trump in the 80s. They were finally ready in the 2010s. And that's what happened. This concern that the elites, that the establishment had created a globalized world system and had not responded fast or well enough to the local challenges that it created. So, Matt, I'm with you on that. And, you know, we've had two very different stabs at the education system. I think Obama and Trump have two very different philosophies on the role of the federal government in education. And it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. That's a little bit too big of a topic for me to tackle on the fly right now. What I will say is locally, what I am encouraged by is that we're seeing more institutions like Pima Community College pair up with our businesses locally and say, look, the world has changed. We all know it. What do you need in today's economy? What training and workforce development do you need to see? You need to see XYZ? Okay, we'll train XYZ. And so I think that partnership with changing industry is going to be really helpful. By the way, Andrew Yang, a Democratic candidate for president, I'm not sure how many people still know about him, but he is, I consider him actually be a moderate Democrat, but he's a Silicon Valley Democrat, somebody who has watched economies change and go, wait a second, this is what happened in 2016, and we can't just say we'll just re-educate folks, and we take for granted the process of change and the process of adapting to that change in our fourth industrial revolution, which is going to be more dramatic than any of the revolutions in industry before that. We have to be looking at this, and government most of the time either is ignorant of it or is not moving fast enough to catch up with it. So Matthew, that's a couple of thoughts there. And then Chris, you mentioned something about voting for candidates in the ward that went in the ward, but not in the city. And I thought it was interesting that Paul Cunningham, who's been on this show before, I think if I'm remembering correctly, Paul Cunningham won his ward as well as the city for the first time since he began running or executing his position as a city council person. This was the first time that he has won his ward. I think he's narrowly missed winning it in the last couple elections. It's off the top of my head. So if I need a clarification, give me a call, 790-2040. But I think in the first two terms, he narrowly lost his East Side ward, but won at the citywide level. And I guess the frustrating thing for me is that we don't see the broad thing is, and this is back to Chris's point, we don't see a diversity of thought on the council because the pipelines of people who are interested in running for office from both parties is not the same, right? I might have to ask Tom to help me to translate that. What I mean is the pipeline of local Democrats running for office who can run and win is a million times stronger than the pipeline of Republicans who can run and win. And I think on the Republican side, the pipeline of those who can run is slim, and the pipeline of those who can win is even slimmer. And I always say this, I just remember when the Democrats gave Kyrsten Sinema a ton of crap 2 months ago for being too moderate. And I said this on the air. I said Kyrsten Sinema is running, is whether you like it or not, is running as a Democrat who can run and win in Arizona. You're not going to get a Bernie Sanders Democrat to win statewide in Arizona. You get a maverick individual running and winning over and over in Arizona, and that is Kyrsten Sinema. I feel kind of the same thing locally. I think there are efforts right now to help train up both Republicans and Democrats who can win on local city issues and who are viable on both sides. And I don't think that we have that. We have that right now. I'm still convinced. A lot of people way smarter than me, and I mean that, have told me, the system, a ward-only system, will not allow a Republican to win citywide. I actually don't believe that. I think it has to be a principled Republican who understands the local issues and how to win locally. I don't think we've seen that yet in many, many, many years in Tucson.
So
before the system gets changed, it'd be different if we had solid candidates on both sides running and the R's just kept losing. To me, then I would go, okay, we need to change the system. We haven't had that in a while. So that's my conundrum a little bit.
So are you saying that on page one of the handbook of how to win popular elections, you have to pretend to be someone or something that you are not?
No, you have to know the community you're running in.
So when is it that you are not lying to them in order to get elected and you're just kind of coloring or blowing a little bit of smoke about who you really are in order to get elected?
No, and I'm not saying that you change who you are. I'm just saying I think that a candidate who runs locally in either party has a very specific vision, understanding, and skill set than if they're running for a state or a federal office.
I'm glad you bring that up.
And I don't think that we have enough candidates who understand local issues and understand how to address those local issues. And I think until we do, the ward versus citywide conversation is still a step ahead. That's just me. 790-2040. As Tom is helping me wade through this topic, I'm also getting the eye that our final break of the hour is here. Let's go there, and then when we come back, we'll take calls, and I'll give you some of my predictions.
While we go into the break, I want you to ponder this.
Okay.
I think the reason Trump got elected was because he came right out and said, hey, I am not a politician. If you elect me, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to break up that happy little camping mess they call Washington, D.C., or swamp mess, I guess is the way he put it. But anyway, all right, so let's get this break underway.
Let's do a break. When we come back, we'll get to your phone calls. Keep the calls coming in, 790-2040. On our way back, my predictions for the 2020s, and yours too. Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be right back.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Tucson, welcome back to our first show of 2020, going by quickly. And as always, just never able to get through everything that's on my mind or your mind, Tucson. That's okay, because we do this every day, 9 to 10, Monday through Friday. So there are a lot of days of 2020 to get through stuff. Some of my predictions for the 2020s, we'll get there in a minute. Let's go to our phone lines and talk to Donna. Donna called 790-2040. Donna, you're on the line. I appreciate you calling in.
Hi, Zach. You said that a person is a Republican, and in order to win the city, has to know something about the community. Well, Michael Hicks was on the school board for two terms, so he knew something about the community, and he did win in his ward. So that kind of refutes what you said.
Donna, I appreciate you you calling in, and certainly certainly Republicans have typically won in Ward 2 and Ward 4. I think, and I'm glad that you called in, Donna, because I wanted to, as Tom and I were talking in the last segment, wanted to keep addressing this a little bit more. I think the challenge that I've been hearing is you have wards where you can win the ward, but not the city, and we should shift the system to be ward only, kind of in the way that we elect our Pima County Board of Supervisors, right? The whole city doesn't vote on Ward 5 or District 5 or
District 1. Is that a Tucson thing? Do other cities do this too?
Most cities. So Tucson is odd in two.
You can win your district or your ward, and yet in the general election, you'll get aced out by a Democrat because there's more Democrats in the whole area.
So my understanding is the two things that Tucson elections do that are a little bit off from most other cities. The first is when we do them. So most cities have shifted over to even year elections. They match with either midterms or general elections state and nationally. We do ours on odd years, and we've been fighting with the state to keep that. We do expect a challenge in 2020 to that again. And the city thinks that it can win again. And so for the foreseeable future, we'll keep doing our elections in odd years instead of even. The other thing that most cities don't do is what we do, which is ward only or citywide, where you are where you are elected by the entire city. As I understand it, most municipal elections run more like our county elections, where people are voting from their district for their district. And so there's certainly been some compelling arguments to change from a citywide election in the city to a ward only. What I was saying to Donna's point, I wasn't saying that we don't have good candidates who are winning their wards. I'm saying what has to happen for a candidate to be able to win the entire city. And I think there are a diversity of local city issues, and I feel this about a lot of candidates who do win, that they don't understand the whole city. But what I'm saying is, I think that it is possible for a candidate to win their ward and the entire city, but that takes a certain kind of candidate understanding local issues. So, Donna, I appreciate your call and pushing on that, but you're exactly right.
Why couldn't it be like the legislature in our federal government, where if you win your district, you go and you sit on the council as a representative of your district, and each district would have a representation by the people who voted for them in that particular ward or district?
Yeah, which is kind of like how the county does it, right?
Somewhat.
Right, in the sense of, you know, District 1 voters are not voting for District 5. They're voting for District 1. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because the way this things are set up for the city, it's like if you were going to run for the House of Representatives, you could win Arizona, but then you got to run against everybody else across the whole country, and only those people in California and New York and Chicago are going to get elected because they have the population and Arizona doesn't.
Mm, gotcha.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't. No, I do. I'm just wondering, why can't each district have representation from their district,
right,
elected by the people and in that ward or district?
Right. You know, and that's what and I know a diversity of people. I mean, the number of people who are coming out for ward-only elections in the future is more diverse than you would think. It has not come from just one from just one viewpoint. The interesting argument, I'll just touch on this for just 15 seconds because our time is really running out, is that there's others who are not for ward only, just this is an interesting point, who say that in effect, if you do in the city ward only elections, you will effectively gerrymander some wards. And I actually don't disagree, you know, because there are some wards who are dominant R or dominant D that would be that way for a long time to come if it was ward only. And I think having citywide elections, actually, if you get the right candidates that are spending time outside of the wards, that are in the whole city, addressing all city issues, I think there's actually opportunity for a greater diversity of candidates to come out of that system than ward only. So
if a particular ward is dominated by Democrats, why shouldn't they elect a Democrat? And another ward is dominated by Republicans that live there, why shouldn't they elect a Republican? Then you'd have a Democrat and a Republican on the city council, and each ward represented that way.
I'm just saying, I think if I just think that I don't know. It's
okay. Well, I've kind of gotten you off track a little bit, and I apologize. So take over.
That's all right. I appreciate the calls. 3 minutes ago, some of my predictions, and I was going to talk some Stone Garden today. I was going to talk some Stone Garden on Monday, and it just didn't happen. We'll get to it, I promise. I know Chris in the first 3 hours of our morning talk lineup hit on it very much. So we'll leave that there for now. But I think for the 2020s, I have two just quick predictions. One is I think we are in line for another Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan type progression in the 2020s. I'm talking nationally now. I think that if we look back in 5 or 6 years and see a Biden or Buttigieg one-term Democratic presidency followed by two terms of a Reagan-type Republican in the 2020s, that would not surprise me in 10 years looking back. I think that Jimmy Carter was not the best president, but he was a moral rinse. Didn't really see him coming. Maybe wasn't the most qualified. The country was tired and exhausted. Elected a Jimmy Carter, Buttigieg-type character. Kind of went kind of meh. But it was a turning of the tide away from the Nixon and Ford and Vietnam era. And I feel like we're in that exhaustion now. So that's just a what comes next futurist projection. Who knows if it'll happen, but I think we're in that cycle again. And I think locally, what I'm hoping doesn't happen is what one of our callers said, Chris, earlier in the hour. I am hopeful. And it's why I do this show, because I think Tucson's at a tipping point. I'm hopeful that the 2020s builds off of the 2010s. And I hope it's not a reaction to the 2010s. I hope that we figure out how to have inclusive economic growth, that we figure out how to keep our young people here, that we figure out how to grow and bring companies and enterprise and business here, and make Tucson a place where people can stay and thrive. I'm hopeful that that happens. And I feel like I have less of a prediction of what Tucson's going to look like in the 2020s than nationally. But I'm hopeful that we'll also break through the polarization of the 2010s in the 2020s. I don't know if we can keep going this way, where every 8 years is a direct block and obstacle to what came the 8 years before. I don't think that we can keep doing that. So 2010s in review. Shoot me an email, thecreativecityshow@gmail.com. If you want to chime in, ask a question, get a little bit, you know, maybe I didn't get to cover something you want to talk about it. Shoot me an email. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 with Barbara Coffey, the whole hour, Director of Economic Initiatives for the City of Tucson, to talk about what's ahead for Tucson in that regard. Bill Buckmaster coming up at noon. You don't want to miss the rest of the day. Tucson, we'll see you at 9 tomorrow. Take care.